This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. San Antonio just had a weekend of fun and excitement with visitors here for the Final Four. Downtown San Antonio was on display for the basketball fans here in SA and on national television. The sense of place was one of the stars of the game, and historic preservation of downtown helped make that happen. And now downtown preservation is getting another boost with the new historic federal historic downtown designation. District designation. This is more than just a feather in the city's cap. It's dollars in the bank for investors who zero in on developing downtown San Antonio. But what does this designation mean? How did we get it? And will it change downtown for the better? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at @tprsource. We're joined by Shannon Miller, Director of the City of San Antonio's Office of Historic Preservation. It's great to have you back, Shannon.
Thank you.
Vincent Michael is here, Executive Director of the San Antonio Conservation Society. Vincent, great to have you, sir.
Great to be here, David.
And Gregory Smith is on the line. He's the National Register Coordinator for the Texas Historical Commission. Gregory, are you there?
Hello.
Yeah. Hey, great to have you, sir. So first off, I wanted to talk about, we'll get to the historic preservation. I want to, this news today that the Gunter and Sons Incorporated was sold to a Chicago firm. This is one of the oldest, or is not the oldest, continuously operated business in Texas, downtown, the Pioneer Flour Mill. A lot of people, I know this very much. And they're right downtown. They're in the King William area, a big part of the Riverwalk. So any comments on that, Vincent Michael?
Well, I think, you know, it is one of the, I can use the term legacy businesses that we have here in San Antonio, and we certainly hope that that iconic White Castle building at the foot of King William remains a part of our landscape for a long time, despite the new ownership.
And Shannon Minnesota, a Pioneer Flour Mill, you know, that's a big part of San Antonio's historic historic culture.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And it is a very, I mean, obviously the business being one of our legacy businesses is very important, but it is such a recognizable landmark too. You know, a lot of people kind of use it for wayfinding, like, oh, there's the Pioneer Flour Mill. So definitely important to the city for both reasons.
And so when a sale like this happens for a very important part of San Antonio's history, it's also a company, you know, and they have to, it's an enterprise. And when this happens, does it keep, because does it scare you a little bit? Do you wonder what's going to happen now? Or do you feel that these people will, who come in, this Chicago firm, an outside firm, they're going to be thinking about San Antonio's history as well?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we're hopeful. I mean, you know, people understand. That's what attracts people to San Antonio is a lot about our history and our built environment. And we definitely look forward to working with the new owners on any issues they may have and welcoming them into the neighborhood.
Okay, now back to the original cast, what we're supposed to be working on right now. That's the Downtown Historic District. And so Shannon Miller, can you tell us more about what does this mean?
Sure. I mean, you know, we're very excited about the listing of the Downtown National Register District. There are actually 172 properties that are contributing in the nomination or in the new district. And what that means is that those buildings are now eligible to take advantage of state and federal tax incentives for historic rehabilitation of those buildings. And the reason why it's important and really why the Office of Historic Preservation worked on this, my staff actually wrote the nomination, which I'm very proud of. They did a fantastic job. And the reason is that it's important is that, you know, a lot of buildings would maybe not have been eligible individually if they tried to become listed on the National Register by themselves, because, you know, they may not have enough significance individually, but as part of the larger collection of downtown San Antonio, they're considered contributing. And so it really extends the availability of those incentives to more properties than otherwise might have been able to take advantage of them.
Greg Smith, you're the coordinator for the Texas Historical Commission on this area. Can you talk more about how this helps preserve history?
Well, as Shannon mentioned, it opens up the opportunity for property owners to take advantage of state and federal tax credits for rehabbing any buildings for commercial purposes. The state credit applies to nonprofits as well, and so that's been a big boost. We've always seen a lot of properties coming in from San Antonio and and Bexar County. And now with our state tax credit, that number has only increased. And so the listing is helpful because not all of the buildings would have been individually eligible, but they contribute to the district overall. And so those are treated the same when it comes to the tax credits.
Vincent Michael at the San Antonio Conservation Society, y'all are in the business of trying to make sure that our historic buildings stay upright. And so how does this factor into that?
Well, I think it's a huge help. I mean, you look at projects like the St. Anthony Hotel, $100 million project, $25 million in tax credits. That sort of ratio is now available to a whole lot of other properties downtown. So we're very excited about it. And, you know, our philosophy as a private preservation advocacy group is you want these buildings to be viable economic uses. This just creates more opportunity for that.
Got an email from Adam. He says, I'm an architect and I'm curious about changes in due process for development in downtown area. Any new layers of regulation, oversight, and review will necessarily add time and cost to any project, which will ultimately impact the total project budget. Since San Antonio currently has a robust historic and design review process, it would be helpful to know how these new designations will be integrated with our existing regulations and what effect will this add to the complexity that they have on projects, budgets, and timelines. So Shannon Miller.
Sure. Actually, it doesn't change the review process at all. The National Register designation by itself does not add any local regulatory layer. If a property is subject to HDRC review because it's designated historic or it's in the RIO or the Downtown Design Guide, then it will continue to be subject to the same type of review. The National Register district does not add additional review requirements.
So this designation, it's nice to be able to say, hey, we're a federally designated downtown area, but really what we're celebrating is the tax credits that come with that. Is that right?
Yeah, it's very true. And I mean, I should say that there are some review requirements associated with National Register. If someone is utilizing federal funds or there's a federal undertaking, then it does trigger federal review requirements. But from a local design review perspective, there are no additional requirements. And it is largely a way to just promote the properties and raise awareness of the historic significance and celebrate that history in our community. And then, of course, as we really the motivation behind the initiative is to make them eligible for those incentives.
So just kind of want to put it in a nice little tidy capsule here to address Adam's concerns. No worries. Basically, it's all the same to you if with this new designation, especially if you're not even going after those tax credits.
Correct.
All right. So that's nice and smooth there. So Adam, no worries. We're going to go to a break, but I do want to stress that this is a community conversation and our phone lines are open. You can call in with your questions and comments. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. You could email your questions and comments to the source at tpr.org. Tweet at us at tprsource. Do you have any concerns about downtown historic district designation? Do you think that there's other areas in San Antonio that we need to be focusing as well? Are you concerned that maybe downtown San Antonio is sucking up all of the preservation oxygen that we have? Where else should we be focusing on? Call in, let us know. The number is 210-614-8980. The source continues after this quick break. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. In Texas, 126 real estate projects have used the federal historic tax credit since 2002. That's according to the National Trust for Historic Preservation. Dallas has claimed the most credits with 23 developments valued at more than $370 million. Most of the downtown projects involved conversion of office towers into apartments and condos. Houston was second with the most historic credit projects with 13. Now, San Antonio has had 12, and we expect that number to go up considerably now that all of downtown San Antonio has been given the downtown historic district federal historic district designation. If you got a question or comment, give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Gregory Smith is with the Texas Historical Commission. What have you seen? What are some of the projects that you've seen that have really used this credit well to preserve buildings that otherwise might have gotten knocked down?
Well, the first state credit project that was that was approved was actually in San Antonio. It's the St. Anthony Hotel. And so that was the first of the state projects. I don't know if that was never in threat of being knocked down, but it's always good to see the property owners reinvest in the historic properties. And that had been listed previously in the 1980s. There are lots of other projects that are under review right now, including several that are outside of the downtown historic district, including the Poe Motor Company on Broadway and several buildings at Trinity University.
Okay, let me go to a caller, and this is Leticia. The number is 210-614-8980. If you want to join our conversation, you're welcome. Leticia, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, yeah. I'm calling about the Alison Abacha courts that are in the West Side. I'm a resident of the West Side, and we've been in discussion with the developers. My concern is that every time there's a project about development, it's always to tear down buildings and put up new ones instead of trying to find ways to renovate. And I've talked to different architects, and there are many that say that the projects can be done within the same budget of tearing down buildings and putting things up. So anyway, I'm just pointing out this project.
So, Leticia, did you say you live in the courts?
I don't live in the courts, but I live in the West Side.
Okay.
And, I mean, just a few blocks from the courts.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much. So let's go to Vincent Michael. He's executive director of the San Antonio Conservation Society.
Yeah, well, I think that's an interesting question. I've had meetings with the West Side Preservation Alliance, who are very concerned about getting the Alison Apache courts preserved, whether it's on the National Register or otherwise. And I've shared with them a lot of information about other early public housing projects that have been listed on the National Register and rehabbed using tax credits and or going through the Section 106 process. And it's an interesting issue because these are more than 50 years old now. They're almost some of them almost 80 years old. And they're worth preserving. And I think Leticia's comment is a very good one. When you have something that's a serviceable building, finding a way to reuse it is ultimately going to take less physical resources.
The courts, it's huge. It's a big area.
Yes.
And the individual spaces where families occupy are very small. I mean, as you said, they were built in the 1940s, one of the first public housing projects that was underway. I know Eleanor Roosevelt came down to San Antonio and got that thing kickstarted. But you kind of wonder, okay, if you have to have people live in these spaces, you have to factor that in as well. And from my understanding that many people, they want to live in a higher quality space.
Yeah, and one of the things, I had a lot of experience up in Chicago with the redevelopment of the Lathrop homes there, which were a 1937 public housing project. And what they did there was they reconfigured them, because the amount of space you need for a family of four in 1937 is very different today. So some of them were reconfigured for fewer people. Some of them were, they broke through the walls and made it a bigger unit. So there are things you can do within the envelope of a building.
Okay, and we've had the San Antonio Housing Authority, which is the landlord for the courts, on before, and we'll have them on again talking about this issue because I know it's really important for the west side of San Antonio. But as we talk, you know, obviously we're hearing from Leticia that people are concerned about history of the entire city, not just downtown San Antonio. And so, Shannon Miller, I mean, is it possible that other federal historic designations could come to San Antonio, maybe around the missions on the south side?
Sure, of course. There are a number. Greg might actually know the exact number, but there are several National Register districts in San Antonio. So the downtown is not the only one, of course. And there are potentially other areas that could be eligible. And we are definitely interested in helping people position themselves to take advantage of the incentives. And so definitely looking at working with neighborhoods to identify new areas for local and national designation. And, you know, this is one of the things, too, is starting to look at new types of resources. We've discussed on the show before our Legacy Business Initiative. We have an intangible or cultural heritage initiative where we're really trying to identify things that aren't just significant for their architecture, but are significant because they're part of our local culture. And so those types of properties, which historically may not have always been designated, are now being looked at and may also be eligible for local or national register listing.
So the Texas Historical Commission is involved in the process of recommending projects based on the U.S. Department of Interior's criteria. And so that's where you come in, Gregory Smith. Can you talk about how the state has a tax credit as well?
Right. There's the federal tax credits were established in the 1980s for commercial properties, and a few years ago, the state legislature and the governor approved the establishment of a state credit that works more or less in parallel with the federal tax credit program. They were designed to be very similar. The state credit is open up to a larger number of properties because it also applies to nonprofit organizations as well as universities. So it's a broader program, and we've seen a lot of interest statewide since that was established.
Right, and so the state's tax credit is worth 25% of the eligible rehabilitation costs for the project, which must be at least $5,000 in value. And the absence of a state income tax, the credit is applied against the business's franchise tax liabilities. But that is, in the end, still money in the bank.
Right, and even if the entity does not pay the franchise tax, the credits can be sold. So there is a market for those where there are brokers that buy and sell these credits.
And so, let me ask you that, Shannon Miller. So, when people come to San Antonio and they want to invest in San Antonio, and it was just last week we had on the Houston Street development, and we were talking about all the interest in trying to deal with those properties. I mean, they're looking at these opportunities and these offsets that we get in their taxes in order to make that decision whether it's going to be a go or no go on these development projects.
Yeah, it's very true, and that's why we think. Helping people access the federal and state tax credits is such an important part of the equation, because, you know, as Greg said, it's a 25% credit at the state level and a 20% credit at the federal level, and they add up. And so, you know, 45% of a project is a pretty significant amount of money. And then that's not taking into account local tax incentives for historic rehabilitation and other incentives that the city has for development and redevelopment in various parts of the city.
So tell me what you think the world would be like if these things didn't exist and a businessman looks at a building in downtown San Antonio and he has to weigh his options. Is it worth it to go in here to try to save, like, the Crest building on Houston Street, which is a historic building, it's got great facade, it's got all these great things, or just knock it down and put up a shiny new tower?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely factors in. I mean, I would agree with Vince. I think in a lot of cases, it is more cost effective to retain the existing building, even if there aren't incentives available. But there are lots of myths out there that would conflict with that. And so I think there are a lot of assumptions that people make about the cost of rehabilitation. And so all of these incentives really help to offset the perceived or real costs that are associated with the rehabilitation.
Okay. And Vincent, Michael?
Yeah. The thing to remember is that the big trick to a redevelopment project is really the financing. And when you're able to go into a bank or a lender or an investor and say, we've got these credits, it's almost like you have more equity up front. That's really how it works financially in the deal. So it makes the deal easier to sell.
And with 45%, you know, available to you, that's a lot.
Yeah. So it basically tells a bank this project's going to work.
And so since we just got this designation in February, how soon does this become available, come online?
Actually, people have been applying for the credit while the district was in process. The listing had to be finalized for people to actually be able to get the credit, but they still could go ahead and apply. And so there are several projects that are kind of in the pipeline, so to speak, working with the Texas Historical Commission and the National Park Service on taking advantage of these credits.
Let me go to the phone lines again. This is Lorena. Lorena, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you. My question for your guest is, considering the amount of tax credits that these developers get to rehab buildings or reconstruct areas in downtown areas, I'm wondering why the condos and apartments they build are well without the reach of most middle-class homeowners. Hypothetical situation, you could own a paid mortgage-free, a $200,000 home in San Antonio, but if you wanted to move downtown where you could walk and not depend on cars, you really couldn't pay for a new condo without taking out a fairly large mortgage. It's like they're not allowing anyone but those who can afford the super-priced homes to move downtown.
Great point, Lorena. Thank you so much. So if you're using tax offsets to support building of these buildings, do the owners of these buildings have some sort of obligation to the greater public?
I think that, you know, part of the challenge is you're dealing with land values too. And so your costs for new condos in all those locations is going to be just problematic. It's going to be a similar problem. In the past, there have been combinations of using the historic tax credits with low-income tax credits. And I know there's some projects downtown where they were going to do historic buildings and try to use the low-income tax credits. So those are the ones to look for. I'd also, you know, remind you that we do have other parts of town that are in National Register districts. And if the values aren't as challenging as they are in an expanding downtown, there could be affordable places that are within a short jump of downtown.
And Gregory Smith, do you want to add to that?
I don't really have anything too much to add to it. I think both of the other guests have answered the question fine.
Right. So I just think one of the issues here is, though, the saving of our history. Of course, the caller, Lorena, brings up a great point. But, you know, this preservation of history in and of itself is something of value to the greater good as well. And so it's complex. There's a lot of things that you have to weigh. Shannon?
Yeah, I mean, that's actually what I was going to add is that, you know, we have to remember that part of the reason why we have the incentives in the first place is that historic preservation and rehabilitation of our existing building stock is a public good. And reinvesting in those, I mean, you know, we love to say that the greenest building is the one that already exists. And the beauty of reusing our historic buildings is that it's environmental sustainability, it's recycling, it's cultural sustainability because we're maintaining that history. And it's also economic sustainability because, you know, it's been proven over and over again that historic preservation pays back in the local economy.
But this is also, in some eyes, a controversial program. The person who has gotten the most money out of this program for a specific build has been Donald Trump with the old post office in Washington, yeah. D.C. And many people have questioned whether or not that was an adequate use of this program. He was able to recapture millions and millions of dollars from this program.
That's absolutely true. I mean, that project was there. And it's interesting that the historic preservation tax credits were one of the few things to survive the big tax reform last year.
Almost didn't.
Yeah, I mean, it was really the leadership of the Senate.
It was zeroed out of the House side of the bill,
right.
And it was survived in the Senate side, but with some changes, no longer can recapture all of the lost money at one time. Now it's got to be measured out over 5 years, and some questions about how to qualify for this program as well. So we're going to talk more about, but we want to really focus in on what part of downtown is included, what specific sites, what specific buildings, what's your wish list for preservation in San Antonio. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this break. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Downtown San Antonio is a jewel, but now it is a historic jewel according to the federal government, and they have a historic preservation status, district status. And this is more than just bragging rights. This is dollars in the bank for people who invest in downtown. What parts of downtown? What's your wish list for historic preservation in San Antonio? How does this change the future of preservation in San Antonio? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. And Eduardo is on the line. And Eduardo, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for the panelists and for you, David. So basically, I just wanted to bring another layer of the discussion of regulations that everything falls under. I forgot the name of the law. It was passed about, I guess, 5-7 sessions ago now. But in Texas, the landowners cannot be restricted to affordability, but they can be incentivized towards it. And that is part of why we don't have rent restrictions in Texas, but we do have a lot of tax credits given to developers to bring some affordability into what otherwise would not be affordable at all. I just wanted to comment on that and hear what y'all have to say about how impactful that is and would we be able to change it in Texas.
Okay, Eduardo, thank you for the call. Let me go to Gregory Smith of the Texas Historical Commission, since this is a wider view. So what about to Eduardo's point?
Well, that's true. It's very difficult to enforce affordability. So there are incentives to do so, but it's hard to make it so through regulation in the state of Texas.
Right, since it's such a strong property rights state, we really can't just dictate to people what to do with their property that they own, but we can make it make sense for someone to do the right thing. But that does involve some complicated sort of efforts through like these tax incentives, and so that's what this is all about. But what we're talking about downtown San Antonio, but downtown means different things to different people. What exactly is this area that we have, Shannon Miller?
Well, it is mostly the kind of the heart of what you think about downtown. I mean, if you picture the horseshoe that is the historic Hugman portion of the Riverwalk, that whole area is included. It extends further north, and then it does go just a little bit, like a little ways up Broadway, just past the Tobin Center kind of area. And basically, so there, I mentioned earlier that there are other National Register districts in the area. So for example, there's the Main and Military Plaza National Register District, and there's the Alma Plaza National Register District. And so part of the motivation was to fill in those gaps between the existing National Register districts. So when you look at the map, you're kind of like, I wonder why there's this notch here. But in most cases, that's why. If you looked at the other National Register districts next to it, you would see that this latest initiative kind of filled in the holes in between the existing districts.
So pretty much all of downtown that we know, like between I-10 and 281.
Almost. It doesn't go quite as far west, and it also doesn't go like it's not everything isn't included all the way to 37. So,
but if you just hop right over, you have the market right across from, there. Why isn't that included?
Well, it's not that it's not eligible. It's just, as I mentioned, those things are captured in other National Register districts. And so we are really just trying to capture the things that weren't already included in National Register districts.
So is that the plan to try and expand and build upon that? And Cattleman Square as well?
Yes, potentially. We actually are working on a possible additional expansion to capture some additional properties that might be eligible. So we are actively still in discussions about where we should look next for designation.
So Vincent Michael, executive director of the San Antonio Conservation Society, does this make your job easier to have this designation?
I think it does because, you can offer incentives to more people. It also makes it clear as to what is significant in contributing. Because the question, it's not just a boundary, and it's not like everything in the boundary is treated the same. As Shannon said, there are 172 properties that are contributing to the district. So when you think about all the parking lots on the west side, well, that's west side of downtown, and that's area that could be developed. There's a lot of opportunity in between and buildings that are more modern and wouldn't be eligible for the incentives. So this clarifies for anyone, what are the good buildings downtown to use tax credits on? What are the important ones to save?
So if someone wanted to put something on one of those parking lots, that's an area that's already been like clear cut, shaved and asphalted over, are they required to do any sort of excavation, archaeology? We know that there's been all sorts of history in San Antonio going back hundreds, if not thousands of years.
There are certain areas that are definitely subject to, looking for archaeology. La Vieta is a prime example where we know that there's layers under there.
Like what, talk more about that.
Well, we know that Santa Ana was stationed there at one point during the siege of the Alamo. We know there was an early school there. It's La Vieta, so it was a very early 19th century settlement. It makes sense that would be a site of any Native American activity in settlement because it was high ground near the river.
L. Dot on Twitter asked, who decides what the core is, Shannon Miller?
The core of downtown?
Yeah, the urban core.
Yeah, I mean, there are
definitions.
That's
kind of a loose term, right?
Sure. It's not narrowly defined. I mean, there are technical definitions that the city uses of, like, the downtown business district and things like that for the purposes of ordinances. But when we talk about the downtown area, it's just kind of like you said, you know, people generally think of what kind of is in between the interstates that kind of set off what we think of as downtown.
And so this district does cover part of La Villita as well, and goes up to the Tropicana.
Yes, and the reason La Villita is itself a district, and I think this district helps clarify the northern boundary right along Villita Street, which actually includes two buildings owned by the Conservation Society, which are the Little Rhine Steakhouse and Dashiell House, 511 Vita, which is used by the Fig Tree.
This comes at an opportune time for San Antonio, where we're looking at a lot of development. We've got the nonprofit Hemisphere Park Area Redevelopment Corporation. They're doing things there at Hemisphere Park. We've also got the redevelopment happening with San Pedro Creek, which Texas Public Radio is part of, with the Alameda Theater. So this is not coming at a time when there's a lot of, well, you know, let's get started. I mean, we've already gotten started. Things are happening, right?
Yeah, absolutely. There are too many to list exciting things happening in San Antonio right now. And again, we really want our historic buildings to continue to be an important part of that, of our economic growth. And one way to ensure that was to make sure that more buildings could take advantage of these tax credits.
And I think one of the things that happens is when you have that extra incentive or tax credit, it inspires creativity on the form of developers and architects and others to say, okay, I might like to take advantage of that. I see what's happening at San Pedro Creek. What's a way I could approach this that isn't just off the shelf, that isn't the same way I'd do something out 5 miles away on the interstate?
So we have a Twitter for a tweet from Julie. The block around San Fernando Cathedral needs to be restored. Move goodwill someplace else. I have an ancestor buried in the cathedral. I know he doesn't like the neighborhood today. Goodwill, they're right there on Houston Street or Commerce Street. Houston Street, they're there. I guess the idea is that they provide a service. I'm not really sure. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, from our perspective, from the Office of Historic Preservation's perspective, we don't deal with use. I mean, it's really a design or building issue, and so it's not about who should be there or what tenants are appropriate, but really about what we can do to improve the buildings themselves, and make sure, you know, a lot of those buildings in that general area of the cathedral are looking into the tax credits as possible solutions for those buildings. For example, when you first read the tweet, I thought of the Callison block, which is even closer to San Fernando Cathedral. And they have been working closely with the Texas Historical Commission on potential design solutions for dealing with the buildings in that area. There are a number of properties that come to mind. And, you know, you also think about that combined with the Zona Cultural designation along Houston Street. And, you know, there's a lot of activity. Again, you know, so much going on downtown that's exciting. So I do think that we will see some changes to the landscape there.
Well, I mean, a lot of people depend upon that Goodwill Industries facility there. And then there's some other, things happening around downtown that you may not like, but that people use these facilities around the courthouse, a lot of businesses there. And, what about, we're going to drive these out? Is this going to cause sort of a changing the face of downtown from an area that people use to something more upscale? Is that part of the formula we've got to think about?
I think that's an important question to ask. When you look at legacy businesses or institutions, one of the interesting things about the approach we've seen in other cities to that idea, so you think about Goodwill as a use as opposed to the building. I think Shannon explained the building issue well. You think of it as a use. If it's a legacy use, if it's important, then you think, well, where could it be that wouldn't be too distant from where it currently is that might be a better or equally good use to keep this legacy institution within a district. So if, for example, in San Francisco, where they have a legacy business thing, they might move a business a couple blocks away because the building got redeveloped and they couldn't afford it
anymore. Or someone showed up with a big check and said, we really like your location, here's money, go someplace else. Everyone wins as long as we don't remove the benefit of use from the people who depend upon that. We're going to take another break. Our phone lines are open. You got a question or comment about historic preservation in San Antonio, which are on your wish list for saving in San Antonio. The number is 210-614-8980. Now that we have a federal designation for downtown, what does that mean for keeping the buildings that we love, that we grew up with in downtown San Antonio? 210-614-8980. The source continues after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Most of downtown, now a federal historic district. What does that mean for your downtown? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. And so this approval process took a long time, cost $45,000 to bring it all together, but we're expecting millions of dollars in returns. Gregory Smith with the Texas Historical Commission, can you kind of talk about the how complicated it is to make something like this happen?
Sure. Well, the National Register process is open to anyone. Anyone can nominate any property. And so the Texas Historical Commission doesn't pick and choose what's going to get nominated. We are busy working with constituents all over the state who have great ideas about what should get designated. And so that sets our list of things to nominate. So as I said, the process is open. It usually takes at least a year, but it's not unexpected that a historic district could take 2 years or longer just because of the complexity of the nomination, the level of detail. We were dealing with over 200 properties here, and so we want to make sure that we get it right, especially since one of the properties is the Riverwalk. 20 blocks of the Riverwalk, which is complex in and of itself, and was something that we were interested in seeing designated for a long time.
Let's go to the phone lines with Amanda. And Amanda, you're on the air. Welcome to The Source.
Thank you. I was just wondering, I realize we're talking about the downtown area. I was wondering if anybody had any plans or thoughts about the Art Deco District.
The Art Deco District. All right. Thank you, Amanda, for that call. Shannon Miller?
Of course. I mean, you know, much of that area is actually locally designated. The Monticello Park district is a large, one of our largest residential historic districts.
That's
locally.
Kind of up Fredericksburg Road, northwest of downtown San Antonio, what they used to call Uptown. Is that what we're talking about?
Correct. And there are a couple of other smaller districts there as well. And so definitely a lot of important historic buildings in that vicinity.
So we have talked about efforts that are on the drawing boards to redevelop, not redevelop, but sort of polish up that area, give it a spit shine. Is that still in the works? I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an area. You look at certain projects there. I mean, the Deco Pizzeria, is a good example.
Absolutely.
Of reuse. And the residential neighborhood over there is really pretty vibrant and stable.
But the city was active in trying to do something with Fredericksburg Road to fix up the sidewalks, make that area more walkable, and bring some more vitality to the area, which it's one of these places that you drive through, you see a lot of potential, and you say, why doesn't someone do something with this? And there are people working on that.
Sure. There definitely are. And also, of course, the investment that VIA is making along that route because of the bus.
Yes, that's a heavily used bus route
right.
to get to the medical center.
Exactly. And so, there's investment from a number of sources, and you see the fruits of that when you drive up and down the
street. So what are the restrictions of restoring a historic building in order to meet these tax credits to be able to cash in on that? Gregory Smith?
Well, the applicants have to follow what are called the Secretary of the Interior standards, and so those are the guidelines for all the federal and state rehab projects. Essentially, it means retaining the historic features that are still present, and anything that has to be redone, rebuilt, has to be in keeping with what was there originally. For the tax credits, a building doesn't have to be fully restored, but a compatible use must be found, and the changes that are made must be in keeping with the historic character and must also be reversible.
Now, Mark on Twitter says he wants to see the Women's Pavilion and other key Hemisphere 68 structures preserved, including the Wood Courthouse, which was the U.S. Pavilion. So Vincent Michael at the Conservation Society, do you have those also concerns?
Yes. You know, the Conservation Society made the Wood Courthouse one of its priority buildings several years ago, and it will be officially 50 years old on Friday. Friday is the 50th anniversary of the opening of Hemisphere. So all those buildings are now, you know, in the traditional eligibility for the National Register of being 50 years old. So yes, and the Women's Pavilion as well. Wonderful structure. There are challenges to reuse. They're not as simple as an apartment building or even an old automobile dealership, but we think they're very important.
The round structure of the federal courthouse, we're getting a brand new federal courthouse building downtown, so they're going to be moving out of that facility. Is it just going to be a vacant building for a long time? What else? And who would have ownership of? I guess it's a city building.
It's actually federal. It's a federal courthouse. So
yeah, didn't they do a swap?
I think they'll probably be doing a swap, so it will turn over to the city. Right now, it's still owned by the feds.
Right. So, but still, we got to figure out what to do with that.
And yeah, our hope was that the feds would put a restriction that would encourage its preservation. I think that's what they intend to do, and it will be a challenging building to reuse. It was originally, of course, the U.S. Pavilion during Hemisphere. It was a theater space, the Confluence Theater. So I think those are, you know, if you
but it was
think
a theater where you had to kind of like lie down on the floor and look at the ceiling.
You had a three-part screen that slowly appeared to you. You thought you were in a small theater, and then it became a huge space.
Right. So part of the magic of Hemisphere. But keeping that around, I mean, that's part of the struggle of historic preservation is that you kind of, when you're in the moment, you kind of like wonder, well, who wants that building? But then 20 years later, you kind of wonder, like, what happened to that building? And so these types of grants, these types of tax credits, that's what kind of is a solution for that, Shannon Miller?
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's a really great point. And, you know, sometimes people get impatient sometimes and they think we need a solution for this building right now. And sometimes the solution isn't always there. It takes the market a little bit longer to get there. And so, you know, sometimes we have to be patient and buy a little time. But ultimately, we really think that these credits, the tax credits at the state and federal level and other incentives that we have at the local level can help to offset the costs and challenges associated with some of these buildings, because once they're gone, they're gone. And, you know, I always say that, you know, we lose our community one seemingly reasonable decision at a time. And so we want to be very careful about these individual one-off kind of losses, because they do add up. And so that's why we're really working to promote the reuse of our historic buildings.
And Hemisphere had such a odd, I don't know if that's the right word, you know, it had a kind of vibe, and the architecture was interesting, and so the iconography that they used at the time was amazing. You know, you don't use anything like that anymore. You don't see anything like that, and you hate to see all of the vestiges of Hemisphere 68 just bulldozed away, particularly right now where we're getting ready to celebrate 50 years ago. But are there any other buildings downtown, specific projects that are already going to be using these tax credits that you know of?
Yeah, there are a number of projects that are underway. And, I also just wanted to say that related to your point about Hemisphere, there are so many interesting buildings. I mean, the Women's Pavilion is amazing, and all of the historic buildings that H Park has really worked diligently to preserve and reuse, and, you know, new restaurants and places, things like that, are opening up in them.
And then there's that tower thing.
Yeah, there is that tower thing. So, you know, Hemisphere is such an important part of our, you know, kind of down the story of our city and our history. And it is very much still a part of our built environment, too. And making, you know, a lot of people are working diligently to make sure that story remains in place physically, in addition to in our history. And then to answer your question about buildings that are, you know, potentially looking at tax credits, we do know that buildings like the Burns Building, which is across from the Maverick Building on Houston Street, they're in process. I mentioned the Callison Block. There are, you know,
is that the Callison Block? Is that where is that? people who don't know the vernacular?
It is like
on Dolorosa,
right across from the Bear County Courthouse. So
Dolorosa and Flores.
Flores from the courthouse.
Okay, and so they're looking at trying to develop that. And those are like apartments now.
Various uses.
Okay.
There's like a convenience store and some different types of commercial
there's
uses.
There's actually 7 historic buildings on that and about a half a block there.
All right. And so trying to make sure that doesn't get wiped out as well. And so Gregory Smith with the Texas Historical Commission. So given the fact that this was these tax credits were almost lost in this last tax bill in Washington, D.C., do people think that we need to get this while the getting is good? Is it seem like, you know, these things aren't going to be around forever? So let's go ahead and take advantage of them while they exist.
I'm not sure if they're taking advantage of this because they're afraid they're going to go away. I think they're taking advantage of it right now because it's the right fit for them and their development projects. We've been looking at dozens of projects in the downtown area, not just within this district, but also in the Main and Military Plaza Historic District, over in the Alamo Plaza Historic District, and in areas just outside any of these historic districts where we're looking at nominating buildings individually, such as the Alameda Theater.
Which could be the home, or will be the future home for Texas Public Radio in about 2 years. We expect to move in there. So, Vincent, Michael, what projects are you excited about?
Well, I'm excited about a lot of stuff happening at Hemisphere, and I would like to give a plug. This weekend we are celebrating the 50th anniversary, and there's going to be exhibits in all the historic houses. There's also going to be an exhibit at the ITC. There's going to be music and food and a lot of events, so I'd encourage people to see that. I'm very excited about that. I think the Aztec Theater is another one that's thinking about using the tax credits rehab. That's a building we hold an easement on, so I'm excited about the possibilities there.
Will there be Buñuelos at this thing, since that was part of the...
Oh, I hope so.
Big hemisphere. And Shannon Miller, real quick, anything you got you excited?
You know, Greg mentioned the Alameda, and obviously that's going to be the home to TPR, but it's such an amazing building with such a great history, and I'm really excited about seeing that building kind of reinvigorated
and blossoming like all of downtown.
Absolutely.
Thank you, all of our guests, Shannon Miller, Director of the City of San Antonio Office of Historic Preservation, Vincent Michael, Executive Director of the San Antonio Conservation Society, Gregory Smith, National Register Coordinator for the Texas Historical Commission. I'm David Martin Davies. Thank you so much for tuning us in.